Imagine what's possible when learning doesn't get in the way of life. At Capella University, their game-changing FlexPath learning format lets you set your own deadlines so you can learn at a time and pace that works for you. It's an education you can tailor to your schedule. That means you don't have to put your life on hold to pursue your professional goals. Instead, enjoy learning your way and earn your degree without missing a beat. A different future is closer than you think with Capella University. Learn more at capella.edu. Hey, nurses. Welcome to the Nurse Dot Podcast, giving nurses validation, resources, and hope, one episode at a time. Today on Nurse Dot Podcast.
Technology can only help so much. It's not going to replace that human-to-human connection. It's also not going to replace elements that are unrefined or broken in our healthcare system. And so we need just as much work on those pieces as well, even while we're trying to bring technology, which will certainly help with a portion of this.
Joining us today, Dr. Finley Zachariah. Dr. Zachariah is the Associate Chief Medical Information Officer at City of Hope. He is also the Chief Medical Officer at Empower Hope, where they are utilizing supportive care, informatics, and value-based care to transform serious illness care delivery.
I'm your host, Kara Lunsford, registered nurse and VP of Community at nurse.com.
Well, we've got Dr. Finley Zachariah with us. How are you, Dr. Finley?
Good, good. How about yourself?
I'm really good. I'm really good. Did you have a good weekend?
I did. Yeah, with the family, and that's always good. So in the pool. Yep.
We did a lot of in the pool too. It was very hot out here in the valley. It was very hot. Whereabouts do you live? Do you?
Inland Empire. So it's even hotter.
That's really hot. Oh my gosh. Inland Empire. Yes. Oh, for the listeners who don't know, that's hot.
Yeah. Pretty much desert effectively. So.
Yes. Yes. So, all right. Well, I am very excited to get to talk to you because you and I and also your business partner, Chris Halsema, have been talking for a while, and you have been working on something that is pretty transformative, I would say, for the healthcare industry, especially in terms of end of life and kind of really getting prepared for that. And helping others and clinicians and hospitals identify that kind of thing earlier and have the proper interventions, I guess. Would you say that that's right? Like that we're intervening appropriately and timely? So I wanted you to talk just, give a little intro about yourself, just personally, like a little bit about who is Dr. Finley Zachariah? And then let's jump into Empower Hope.
Sounds great. Yeah, so I'm a family medicine clinician and then did training in hospice and palliative medicine. And I've actually been at City of Hope Oncology Cancer Treatment Hospital for the last roughly 12 years. Kind of in that time, I initially started out predominantly doing just clinical work, seeing patients day in, day out, most weekends. And in that journey, kind of realized that almost it doesn't matter how much I do, in a sense, there's always more to be done for patients. And there's always so much need that is out there. And so that kind of helped me transition into more systems and looking at what can I do at a system level to impact many, many lives, even beyond the one-on-one interactions that I have had and continue to practice on a clinical level individually. So then that kind of shifted me into more kind of quality systems, and then also on the informatics side as well too. working with a lot of our technology systems within healthcare systems. And even within that, it still felt like we weren't doing enough and we weren't going fast enough in healthcare. And that kind of then prompted this journey to, you know, create a startup called Empower Hope, where it was, you know, even though we have some of the best intentions in healthcare, sometimes systems and health institutions are limited in terms of what are some of the near-term priorities and how do we help kind of move with speed effectively based off of all the other priorities that are going on. And just recognizing, you know, some of the needs that patients have through serious illness, especially around the end of life and some of the mismatches that were happening. That was what kind of inspired Empower Hope to be born. So, and then I guess a little bit about Empower Hope. So Empower Hope is a startup really focused on trying to harness AI to enable person-centered care. And so some of what we try and do is to really try and capture patient preferences. A lot of times in medicine, it's about, you know, you have this disease, we have, you know, this specific treatment for it, let's just go ahead and do it. And so it's almost more of a reductionistic, here's a nail, we have a hammer, let's go ahead and use it. It's like, well, we really should be thinking about, should we swing that hammer or when should we? And even if we start swinging the hammer, then when should we actually, you know, stop or pivot that course? And so the key in our mind is that patient preferences are oftentimes not brought into the healthcare journey. And or if it is, it's not done in a systematic way that really makes it accessible for healthcare teams. And so that's where we have solutions to try and capture patient preferences and things like advanced directives and physician order for life-sustaining treatment forms, as well as them thinking about, you know, how do we surface some of that information to clinicians? And so we have AI models that we've licensed that we've actually worked on, but licensed from institutions to be able to then understand when are those patient preferences appropriate to apply in the healthcare journey, and have a whole kind of suite of solutions to be able to help clinicians then think about what are the decisions that might be appropriate at this time in a person's life.
I'm a big fan of the Empower Hope model. I mean, you and I have spoken. We've had conversations that have been probably more intimate, where we've worked with a family together and talked about end of life. A patient that was very near and dear to my heart who passed away. And you really jumped in and were so willing to consult and talk to that family and understand what the preferences were. What are the preferences of the patient who had started out as a pediatric oncology patient, but by the time she passed away, she was already 18 years old. But I love that what you're trying to do is take something that's so important to you personally and trying to scale it so that it kind of takes you and puts you into every situation in a way, right? Like, because like with technology, with AI, with all of this, it's like you can kind of take something that's really meaningful to you and make sure that it is accessible to every clinician, to every patient. And that's what I think is really fascinating, because I know in my experience, you can't always, it's hard to teach certain things. It's really, really difficult to teach certain things. And so sometimes it's great when there's a piece of technology that can prompt and help, especially with certain conversations and things like that. So what I would love is, let's talk about, you know, real world application, right, of this type of technology. Because I think like when people are listening to this, they're like, and I don't care if you're a hospital administrator listening to this or if you're a patient, right? You're kind of the consumer. Or you're the nurse, right? Or you're the doctor. You want to be able to see like, how does this affect my day-to-day life? How is this good? How is this a good experience? How does this change the life of a patient? And how does it make it, you know, better for the hospital as a whole? How is it a cost savings tool? How is it, like, because we know that things get adopted by large health systems when it affects the bottom line. We just know that. Like, we know that that is a true statement, right? And but at the end of the day, you also want to make sure that the end user, the consumer, understands, why is this important to me? Why should I be advocating for this? Why, as a patient, should I be walking in and ask my clinician team, do you guys use Empower Hope?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, thank you for that. The maybe to give a couple scenarios, perhaps, I think may help make it a little bit more practical and tangible. So, you know, one, I would say for a lot of the work that we've done, it's one of the near-term opportunities is end-of-life care. And so even though that's not necessarily where we see, you know, the larger vision of Empower Hope, we see ourselves working across the entire spectrum. One of the greatest areas of need is really that end of life space. And so, you know, just for many national surveys that are out there, a lot of patients will say, if time is short, you know, great, the hospital is nice, but honestly, that's not where I want to be. I want to be with family. I want to do, you know, other things. I want to, you know, go to Hawaii or whatever they'd like to do. And yet on the front end, what happens is if you have, you know, cancer or congestive heart failure or some other serious illness, at that point in time, it's usually, I want to go ahead and pursue any therapy available. There's a lot of advancements in technology and clinical trials and all sorts of other things. And so the hospital and the healthcare system is usually pretty good at capturing preferences at that point. Okay, great. You know, we understand this disease that you have. We understand your preferences are to go ahead and try and exhaust any available therapy that you have here. Let's go ahead and start, you know, going down that road effectively. What happens then is usually there's not a reevaluation of patient preferences. And so how do you then recapture that same patient who says, yeah, I absolutely want to try clinical trials. I want to try other types of advanced therapies for this disease. But I also, again, don't want to die in the hospital. I want to actually be at home with family. I want to, you know, do certain things at the end of life. And so what Empower Hope allows for is basically to say, you know, even if you are going through some of the most advanced therapies, which we want patients to have access to, we also want to make sure that if patients have complementary preferences, that we're making sure that they have a reevaluation time point within their illness trajectory to be able to say, you know, now I do need to make some more harder choices. It's not just, I have this disease, I want to go ahead and start therapies. It's the doctors, you know, think I may have a few months, perhaps with the help of a tool like Empower Hope, is going through further therapies, is going through the next line of therapy the right thing for me? Or given now it's just, you know, perhaps a very limited time frame, maybe I do want to make different choices for myself and for my family at this time. And so that's, I think, one of the biggest kind of end of life opportunities where we're not trying to, you know, change people's minds. We're not trying to, shift people to say everyone should have hospice or comfort oriented preferences only. It's really understanding who this person is, what they value, and how do we align therapies with that. And for the majority of people, again, that's how do we enable comfort oriented preferences at end of life. For some patients, it is going to be, you know, we want to continue therapies and life is important at all costs, even if I can't communicate or even if I can't necessarily care for myself. If my heart's beating, I want to continue to exercise therapies within medical limits effectively.
Yeah.
On the front end, though, just scaling it earlier, I think the other opportunity becomes, how good are we in medicine? And I think we have a lot of opportunity to say things like, you know, again, who are you and how do we help modify things? And so if it's, I love to play piano. I think we had talked about that example. in the past where, you know, I actually knew a couple of people who knew really, really gifted pianists, and then they had cancer, and then they had therapy, and they actually got neuropathy. And so now they weren't able to play piano in the way that they used to love and enjoy, which was a huge impact. And it's, if we understood that about the patient, could we have actually pulled in the need to have, you know, really fine motor skills and preservation of that as a key factor in deciding any therapy plan for this patient? Or if it's you're on, you know, these cycles of treatment, and we know that for the first week after a specific therapy, it's going to actually make somebody feel really, really crummy. They're going to have nausea or other kinds of things, and they have a key event, a wedding or something else, you know, in that time period. Could we actually know that about the person and then be able to provide decision support to the hospital to say, hey, this really important event is here. We generally understand the therapy and the side effects of it. Can we just shift that regimen by a week, by, you know, a few days here or there, to be able to help make sure that the patient is feeling the best and able to participate fully in what's meaningful to them?
You know, I feel so, I'm kind of overwhelmed, like in an emotional way. In an emotional way, I feel so overwhelmed because, A, I think as a nurse, this is kind of like, This to me would be like a dream come true, really, to be able to have that kind of insight, to be able to advocate for patients because you have that knowledge, because it's been put in front of you. Because what we know is that we just don't have enough time. There's so much data. There's so much to look at. There's, you know, if you get a chance to look at someone's H&P, boy, you're lucky. Like, you know, did you get a chance to fully read the last, you know, note from the last shift and I think that the idea of being able to utilize technology in a way that allows you to explore the art of medicine. I had probably one of the most beautiful conversations, which is our season finale for season 4, was with Dr. Rob McDermott. And he did a TEDx a while back on the art of medicine. I'll have to introduce you guys because I think you'll have a lot in common. And he really talks about, you know, just being able to do the type of care, being able to provide somebody with a warm blanket, coming in and making sure that the patient is warm and comfortable, you know, before you're even having a conversation or a difficult conversation, body language, sitting, leaning against a wall, all of these things that say, I have all the time in the world, even if you don't. And I think that sometimes when you have the idea that there could be a piece of technology out there that could allow us to provide the type of care that we would like to be able to do, that really speaks to retention. So for any of the administrators out there that are listening to this and saying, how does this apply to me? What I would say about that is that this absolutely applies because this is a retention tool. This is a patient satisfaction tool. This is all of those things. Here's the other thing. How much money are they losing in turnover, right? Attrition, all of that. So much money. Okay. You lose a nurse, you lose a doctor. This is millions, millions, and millions of dollars. Okay. And one of the key reasons that people leave is because they feel like they cannot provide safe care, the type of care they signed up to give. They feel it does not feel fulfilling to care for people in a meaningful way. And if you had a tool that could be kind of predictive, it could also help you understand what it is that you're, what's important to your patients, helping you to advocate for them. That is such an important thing because we pour through data. We try to spend time. We do the best we can, even if the patients are like, well, your best is not good enough. Okay. But the thing is that I think most people do. Most people do are doing the best they can. But this is where technology can really, really help us. And that's the kind of thing that I think is so unique and so cool about what Empower Hope is doing, is because it doesn't just empower hope for the patient, it empowers hope for all of healthcare. Clinicians, physicians, patients, and administrators who I am certain want to have better outcomes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just to build off of that for a couple of the different points. So for the staff, you know, as even if we have a great tool or we have, you know, some questionnaire or something else that captures patient preferences, part of the challenge is that you don't know when to necessarily apply those preferences. And so there's specific preferences that are, you know, like the key event may be very relevant during a chemotherapy cycle or something else, whereas the preference to be at home at the end of life is going to clearly be a very late stage thing. And so now when you think about clinicians who have hundreds or thousands of patients who are they're taking care of, it becomes almost impossible for them to remember everything about each patient and what's important. And so that's where technology then helps to, you know, essentially codify that and capture it and then surface it to the clinicians when it's relevant. On the staff side of things, I have heard this so much from my nursing colleagues, and just thinking about all the times I've been in the ICU, and especially that being such an acute place of turnover and difficulty to have staff retention. Part of what I see oftentimes is the compassion fatigue that the nurses have and other staff have. And part of that, I feel like, at least part of my supposition, is that they spend so much more time with patients than I ever do as a physician. And they get to know these patients, and they also see a lot more about what's actually happening day to day and physiologically sometimes as well too, where we get these kind of more macro snapshots. And as they see sometimes, you know, this patient is actually not doing well. They are, you know, having a decline, and then having you know, effectively physicians or others kind of overwrite what they feel like is, we need to be having those care conversations. We need to be understanding who this person is. There may need to be a shift in trajectory, and not being able to exercise their voice or advocate effectively for the patients, I think also leads to that compassion fatigue and moral distress that staff oftentimes feel. And so this with Empower Hope, we feel like it's also a tool for that as well, to be able to say, how can you actually arm yourself with additional tools? The strongest voice is and should be the patient's voice, right? And so if we don't even know that they have comfort preferences, it becomes challenging to even advocate for that. Or it becomes, well, that's your opinion versus, you know, my opinion, and I'm the doctor, and therefore, you know, this should go forward. Versus if it's, yes, there's, you know, staff opinion, doctor opinion, but actually patient opinion, in some ways, the doctor's opinion is actually secondary to the patient opinion as well. And it's then, okay, well, what's most, you know, best serving? Again, I think everyone is altruistic and wanting to do the best possible. But I think sometimes in that moment, we lose the sight of whose perspective is the most important. And when we don't have that information from the patient ahead of time, it becomes very difficult to also apply it in those situations.
Yeah.
But very much, yeah, see it as an empowerment tool to the staff as well as to patients. And we can get into also even the ROI piece as well.
Yeah.
Just from a staff perspective.
Yeah, we're definitely going to touch on that, because I think that, you know, I hate to say it, because sometimes I get a little, I don't know. I don't even know how to say it. I know that our healthcare system, it's a business. It just is. It's just the way we're built here. And you can agree with it. You can disagree with it. You can find benefits around that. You can find deficits around that. to not get too woo-woo, the Libra in me wants to balance the scales on it. You know, I tend to see both sides, but it is important to understand the cost savings of something, because hopefully, and maybe this is the optimist in me, is that I want to believe that those cost savings will go back into the hospital in a meaningful way, that those will be used to, again, help with retention, find other tools that will improve patient outcomes, invest in other tools, invest in making sure that there's enough equipment for all the patients. I recently had to admit a family member. He had a stroke just last week, and immediately saw that he had left side hemiparesis, you know, and slurred speech, and had to call 911, you know, and we had to have him admitted for observation. The thing is that there was something that was really important to him, which was like also affecting his ability to be comfortable in the hospital, because he really did not feel that his care team understood that my wife's birthday was coming up, and he did not want to be in the hospital for her birthday. Now, obviously, if he had to be, that would make sense. Like if he just clinically was not stable enough to be able to come home, that is understandable. He would have to be there. But if there was a way for him to be able to communicate his preferences or help his care team to understand that he had this very important event coming up, it was very important to him. And maybe there were things that they could have done, or they could have expedited something, or they could have made sure that he was out of the hospital or stable enough to be out of the hospital if it was possible. And that's just like something, like that's an example that I'm thinking of that just comes to mind that's kind of relevant, I feel like, to this conversation. How do you feel about that?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's his preferences, and you know, how does the healthcare team even know that? And I'm sure that you guys had shared that with the healthcare team, but can it be easier, right? And it's like, who are you sharing it to? Do you have to share it like 50 times or 100 times versus if you actually put it into a, you know, platform or a patient portal to say, hey, this is what's really, really important to me. I want to be home, you know, for your wife's birthday, and to be able to be there and be with family, and to be present as much as is possible. And then to be able to just share that once rather than trying to say, I think this person has carried it. You know, again, like they're I don't think anyone is ill-meaning when they capture these patient preferences from the family. And then they have 20 other things, or another patient has a very acute event, and then, you know, what was top of mind now becomes, you know, fifth on the list. And then they have the end of shift, and now it may not have been communicated. It really is a way to say, how do we, again, flip this front and center for the care team, and then have almost consistent handoffs, effectively, of patient preferences. So it's there and present at all times.
Imagine what's possible when learning doesn't get in the way of life. At Capella University, their FlexPath learning format lets you learn on your own schedule. A different future is closer than you think with Capella University. Learn more at capella.edu.
I'm thinking about this, and I'm imagining if I was a nurse listening, or if I'm a physician listening, and I have my EHR pulled up, I'm looking at the patient's chart. How is it that I actually get notified? Like, where does this appear for me so that it is, like you said, front and center? When I'm giving report, is that something that comes up? That's available for me so that when I'm giving report, it's something that is, again, front and center. So I can say, by the way, patient preferences are this.
Yeah, I think there's a couple different ways, and so maybe putting my informatics hat on for a second here. Part of it is the passive and active ways to make sure staff are aware. So everyone loves alerts and things that break their workflow. Just kidding, So it's how do you actually put things meaningfully in a way that is highly visible and then is almost effectively passive information. So I do, see the relevance of like a specific tab. If you want to go and you want to see who this person is, being able to capture that information on a specific tab is one way to do it. But there are other ways where we've done stuff within some EHRs where it's you can essentially create columns that allow for visibility of status. So then it becomes part of the inpatient list or the outpatient list, and you can see what is kind of the status of specific things like goals of care conversations, for example. And has this person who is high risk or not actually had a goals of care conversation where you can then see, this patient is high risk for specific conditions by AI model or by other clinical criteria, but they haven't even had a single goals of care conversation. That's not kosher. We need to make sure that this happens. And then there's other times where, again, kind of speaking towards end of life as an example, if you have now, say, patient who's in the hospital and they have a more acute alert on this patient has a very short time to potentially live, then that can actually create an interruptive alert to the clinical team. So kind of through a combination of, almost a repository within the EHR where anyone can go to at their leisure, having passive elements where it's visible within the workflow. So people are able to see it for all patients, and then thinking about very specific critical aspects and moments and preferences that need to be alerted at key times, then having interruptive alerts very, very selectively for that. I think one other thing I'll say too, and with AI, there's oftentimes a worry that, okay, AI is going to take away my job. I'm going to, it's going to basically tell me what to do. And it's like, I went through how many years of school to actually get through this? Like, what has AI done? And so I will say a strong premise of Empower Hope and what I believe is that AI really should be there to augment clinician decision-making, not replace it. And so, there's also what is the validity of the tool that you're using and how good is it effectively? And so with any of these things, there's always going to be trade-offs. If there's a perfect AI tool, amazing. I haven't seen it yet. But when it's short of perfect, it's then more a series of trade-offs. And so are you trying to go for high, what we call positive predictive value, where you want to have it be right a lot of the time versus am I okay with it being right less often, maybe 40% of the time, as we've seen in some studies where they'll say, we want to capture the most patients and we don't want to miss anyone. So depending on how you set those tools, that's where it's again really important for the clinician at the front lines to understand not only what is this tool that I'm using, how is it actually configured for this specific application, and then giving them the ownership to say, again, this is meant to help you. If you think this is bogus, that's fine. You shouldn't act on something that you don't believe in. But if it's a nudge and it helps you with this information when with transparency, to help you, both think of it as well as maybe confirm, reasoning that you've had already, then you can further act on it and it becomes a secondary reinforcement.
Yeah. I did an interview with an executive from Microsoft, and she is also a nurse. And in terms of patient experience and the things that she's doing to move the needle. Also another person that I should probably put you in touch with. I love connecting people. But we talked about AI, and it was really interesting because we posted it on social, and I mean, it was just a little snapshot. It was like one sentence that we released, a little teaser of the episode. And boy, did it ignite a conversation on social. We realized that people had very strong feelings. And they were like, I think making some assumptions that AI somehow was going to replace them, or that there's no replacement for human to human interaction. And I agree with that. There is no replacement for human to human interaction. But to what you're saying is that what if technology improves our human to human interaction? It prompts us, it gives us better information. I would accept that all day long, because I am limited. I'm limited to the amount of information I know. I'm limited to time, how much time I have to go through somebody's chart. If AI could help me as a clinician to A, allow me to walk in the room and have a pretty good understanding of someone's past medical history and why they're in the hospital, and even some of like psychosocial stuff and socioeconomic stuff, if I had a pretty solid understanding of who I'm walking in and talking to, who would not want that ability and have it be pretty accurate, right? Because right now, I feel like we've got nowhere to go but up, because I saw the type of care that my family member received in the hospital, and I was astonished. I hadn't really had someone who I cared about in the hospital for a while. I'd interviewed people, I'd talked to people, but I hadn't had a personal experience in a while. I even had a chance to talk to two nursing students who came in and offered my family member a warm blanket, which was so sweet. I asked them, when are you graduating? They said October. And I was like, oh, wow, October. I'm like, when you come here, what are you doing? Like, what kind of clinical stuff are you doing? What are you able to do? We're only allowed to pass oral meds and give injections. I was like, what? I said, but you're graduating in October. I was dumbfounded. When I graduated 17 years ago, I graduated from county, and a county nurse would hand me 6 charts, physical charts, and walk away until 3 o'clock. And I had to do everything, all the patient care, every single thing for those patients. And that was county. Okay. So you can just picture it. So where we've gotten to, the people that are graduating, the lack of knowledge that they're going to have, the lack of information, they need technology to help prompt them. They're going to need to have that, because otherwise it's not going to be safe.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I will say, this is, I see as a macro layer kind of on top of good medicine, right? And it's like, if there's any question about skills development, or if there's limited amounts of time, it shouldn't be kind of working on, you know, maybe quote fluffy stuff. It's actually making sure that you can take excellent care of the patient. And then beyond that, and so just highlights the need all the more for how do we help make sure that, you know, if there's limited time spent on additional skills building or making sure that the appropriate things are happening, and they're worried about dose titrations, et cetera, all of which is critically important and not necessarily subconscious because of the years of experience that nurses have. Then it's how do you, again, yeah, make sure we can bring the right information relevant and really just more like we hear of so many amazing moments in the hospital of so many compassionate things that staff do or otherwise, but it's oftentimes a one-off. And it's like, how do you, you know, almost say there's a book of like why hospitals should fly, and how do you standardize even just person-centered care throughout healthcare systems and through, you know, with what insurance companies can do and otherwise, to make sure that this is just the, you know, stable experience. This is part of the standard of care.
Yeah, absolutely. I know I got a little bit on my soapbox here, but I get really passionate about this stuff. Like, we have to adopt stuff like this. We have to. It's not a matter of should we, can we? No, it's like we are going to have to do this, because there are huge deficits in skills and things like that. That has to be addressed on its own. Okay. Those things have to be addressed, making sure that people are fully prepared to enter the workforce, that they have the skills. Because the thing is that people also leave. Retention is definitely tied to a lack of feeling competent. There's only so long that you feel like you can just roll the dice on people's lives, right? Every day kind of going, I don't really feel like I'm capable of doing this. I don't think I have the skill sets. I don't think I was prepared for this. So that has to be addressed on its own as well. But I do feel like there are pieces of technology, there are things that could be brought in to supplement, to help, to prompt, so that at least if you don't feel comfortable as a nurse, or even like as an early resident or something like that, where you're like, I don't want to go to the attending and ask this question. Like, or a new nurse not wanting to go to a more senior nurse, or there's not a senior nurse really on your floor, because we've seen that too, where like the most senior nurse has 2 years of experience on an entire floor. And so you have to have these types of tools and things available. We have to.
Absolutely. Yeah, totally agree with that.
Yeah. As I've talked to you over time, and as I've talked to your business partner, I see the value. I really do see the value. And there's other companies out there that are approaching things from an AI perspective in a different way that are also really important that we look at. As a health system and as a healthcare industry, how do we keep things safe for people while we start addressing some of our core problems, some of the core problems that we have? We got to have some things in place that help kind of bridge the gap or keep things safer.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, one of the things I wanted to, you know, kind of just reflect on was, you know, thinking about the role of the nurse and how do they help with kind of this whole spectrum. And so, you know, one, I have the greatest appreciation and love for nurses. My wife is a nurse, my mom is a nurse. And so I would not be, you know, here in medicine without them and their influence on my life and my career. One of the things that you know, I'm working very closely with nurses in the health system now too, where, they really have such a opportunity and that ability to have that voice. And so, yes, there can be concerns about, you know, should I raise certain things? But I think part of it is they may not realize how powerful they are in terms of the position that they have and the opportunity that they have. There's a million things on their plate, but, you know, if they're able to capture some of the stuff and or if they're able to trigger it with the help of tools, you know, so take something that's not necessarily directly in Power Hope, though we can help with it, is social determinants of health. And so, you know, social determinants of health, while there's a significant amount of growing evidence that shows that these needs are really impacting health, and maybe 30% of, you know, what's actually happening with the health of patients in the population, health systems aren't really designed to necessarily address social determinants of health needs. And so, yes, we want to capture, we want to understand who the person is, but we actually would much rather try and refer into community-based healthcare organizations and make sure that that's addressed. And so if there's tools, which there's some great tools out there that help to screen and then help to connect patients based off of need to community-based organizations, my suspicion is that most nurses and doctors and otherwise, they sometimes dive into these things because there is a lack of technology and a lack of solutions. But if it was, hey, your patient has actually expressed that they have housing insecurity, food insecurity, you know, there may be some issues at home that need to be addressed. By the way, the patient has actually consented to their information being shared, and it's already been routed to the appropriate community-based organizations. And the next time you check in, you know, week, 2 weeks, et cetera, you'll be able to see what happened with those referrals. I think most staff would love that and wouldn't feel the need to, you know, jump in and help additionally, because it's like, amazing, our hospital has created and leveraged a technology that has supported the reinforcement of amazing, exceptional care. And that's kind of how we see, you know, some of the tools that Empower Hope has, where it's, you know, with, say, advanced care planning, or with, you know, understanding who they are and medical decision maker choices, that might actually be a great conversation for the nurses to have. The goals of care conversation of sharing prognosis specifically is more of a physician responsibility, and they need to have that. But once that's done, then the nurses also have the ability and the opportunity to actually say, well, look, we've gone to a centralized place where all of these notes are. I see you have these conversations with your doctor. Let's talk about that. Let's explore that more. And you're able to then actually help evolve the patient's thinking and help refine it to be more clear in those choices. And then being able to share that back with the clinical team to say, look, this is coming from the patient. This is, not necessarily my voice. It's actually, I'm just trying to amplify the patient's voice to you. It also frames it quite a bit differently for advocating for the patient and what they need from a person-centered perspective. But just very, very highly appreciative of, the role and the opportunity that nurses have to be able to impact this whole spectrum.
Yeah. And I love that your wife and your mom are both nurses. It speaks volumes also to your very holistic view of patient care. And I'm sure that you've heard stories, and I'm sure that your wife shares with you the struggles that we have, spending 12 hours with a patient. There are definitely situations where, I worked in pediatric oncology for many years, so I had a chance to really get to know my patients for long periods of time, their families. Everyone comes out of the woodwork, right? When there's a child who has cancer, there's church people, there's family members, there's everyone. And you really get an opportunity to learn a lot about families. But the thing is that takes time, right? It takes time to build those relationships, to have those conversations. And there's only so much that you have available to you in terms of time, right? But the thing is that then there's different areas, right? There's emergency medicine. Well, they're just trying to make sure you stay alive long enough to either get discharged or to be moved to the floor. But it doesn't mean that they still shouldn't be, if they could be, armed with some more information about a patient, because they really don't have the time. They really have very, very little time to get into those nuanced conversations and to really understand patient preferences and things like that. But it is, I would say, even more important because they don't have enough time. Do you feel like, is there one area that you feel like you've gotten more traction in or more interest in, whether it's certain areas of the hospital or of medicine?
Yeah, I think we're incredibly early, and so I think there's a vision, yes, of like where we want to be, and we want to be everywhere, but the early days I think are really in that kind of end of life space, and again, knowing the massive disconnect that's happening right now every day with, like for cancer, for example, 2 million patients are going to be diagnosed this year, 600,000 patients are going to die, and of those 600,000, how many of them are going to actually have their preferences honored in a way that's meaningful versus, just going through kind of the hamster wheel in the sense of the healthcare system. And so we do see opportunities from that standpoint. I would say both in the hospital as well as even like ER, et cetera, is I think a key opportunity. We're trying to figure out right now, honestly, how to best work with different members of the team, if you would. And so it's not just a holistic person approach, but it really is, what we see as a challenge, which we're trying to overcome, is there's so many different players in the space. There's, the post-acute agencies who are then working with the hospitals, who are then working with the insurance companies. The doctors are sometimes different medical groups, et cetera. And so it really takes all of them, to be able to have a seamless solution and focusing on some of those more critical points. Like, so with the ER, for example, some of what we're trying to enable is essentially, can you actually have alerts to those healthcare systems? This patient's already on hospice as an example. And so the normal default is we're going to go ahead and stabilize this patient, admit them, et cetera. If they actually knew this patient's actually with this hospice, this is their contact information, and you're able to then potentially stabilize the patient, but then get them back onto hospice if that was their preference, you can avoid a lot of suffering and also, you know, to your point, save a lot of costs for the healthcare system. There's other, not necessarily ours yet, but we've heard of others in the space who are working with ERs to have AI tools that will identify patients and say, this patient may very well be appropriate for hospice. So why admit them, you know, potentially go through all sorts of series of tests? And otherwise, if you can actually have that conversation in the moment in the ER and even transition them from the ER to home. Again, if it's patient aligned and appropriate, and you then have very close, tight-knit partnerships.
How amazing would that be? Is if someone could, you know, that we could save those beds in the hospital for admitting patients that truly do need to be admitted and actually intervene at appropriate times and bring in people like social workers and, you know, end of life specialists and people to have those conversations with patients who might be scared and might be thinking that they do want to, you know, go into the hospital. But at the end of the day, if you're able to sit down with them in that moment and say, look, here's the thing. Sure, we can admit you for a couple of days. And chances are you might end up dying here in the hospital. And if that's what you want, if you're okay with that, we can absolutely make you comfortable, get you to the right place. But if you truly do want to be at home and you want to be in your own bed and you want to be with your family all around you and not be restricted to how many visitors can be in the room and if they can spend the night with you or if they can't, that's something that you have to be able to like intervene at that moment and really empower them to make the decision that makes sense for them. And so I think that that's just a perfect example of why this is so important. And I don't know if there's anything else that you would like to say. Is there anything else you feel like you didn't have a chance to talk about or that you want to say? Because I really want to make sure that you have an opportunity to say everything you want to say about why this is important to you.
Maybe one last element is even as many players as there are in this space, there's also a lot of work that our healthcare system has to do overall. And just how we apply, you know, even just the insurance plans, you know. And so one of the things that's a parallel soapbox of mine within the space is, you know, we have hospice, which is a very defined benefit. It's amazing. There's also home-based palliative care. And that's a emerging opportunity for post-acute agencies to move into a space where they're able to partner with healthcare systems and work with patients with serious illness. But the challenge is that it's not well defined in terms of how insurance reimburses for it. And even if you have one of the large insurers, there's so many managed plans underneath it that candidly, as a inline clinician, I have no idea, even if the macro insurance plan says, yep, we cover palliative care for patients, I don't know if this patient in front of me actually has, you know, palliative care covered. And as you know, from the pediatric oncology space, there's so much literature showing that patients who are even able to actually, for concurrent care, for example, be on hospice, there's massive benefits to the family, massive benefits to the healthcare system and insurance companies overall from ROI. That same benefit is there with home-based palliative care. And I think we need to work just as hard on the policies and making sure that when people are saying we provide palliative care, that they're as transparent as possible about it. If it's you provide palliative care, please then do that, you know, across the board. Make it a core part of all your managed plans, not just have it be that we offer it. And by the way, it's for the 1% of plans that are just our main plan and not the ones that are outsourced. So that there's technology, basically, my point is more that technology can only help so much. It's not going to, as you said, replace that human-to-human connection, and that we want to amplify. It's also not going to replace elements that are unrefined or broken in our healthcare system. And so we need just as much work on those pieces as well. even while we're trying to bring technology, which will certainly help with a portion of this.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, like you don't want you don't want a piece of technology that prompts you to do certain things, and then you realize that there's not even that the solution doesn't exist, or it doesn't exist for that patient. Like that's also very demoralizing for the clinician, for the patient, to say, well, this is the recommended route. However, that's not available to you. So that just has to be fixed as well. So I think that was such a great call out, is that, yeah, there is only so much that we can do if there's not systems and programs in place and paid for by insurance that can allow you to actually have the very experience that Empower Hope is hoping to be able to provide to patients. So that was such a great call out and such a wonderful interview. Thank you for also allowing me to get on my soapbox every once in a while. I try to, for the most part, allow the interviewee to speak a lot, but every once in a while I get really passionate and I, you know, run with things. But this was really such an enjoyable conversation.
Thank you for the time, Cara. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, we will catch up, and I will also be making some of those connections for you, because I think that they could really help move the needle. So thanks so much for spending an hour with me, Dr. Zachariah.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Very good.
Bye.
If you're a nurse or nursing student that enjoyed this episode, visit us at nurse.com/community,
where you can find the Nurse Dot discussion group, a place where we dissect each episode in detail and delve deeper into today's topics. Nurse Dot is a nurse.com original podcast series. Production, music, and sound editing by Dawn Lunsford. Production coordination by Rhea Wade. Additional editing by John Wells. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in to the Nurse Dot podcast. Until next time, keep spreading the love and the care.